everybody. Welcome back to the Be There in 5 podcast. I'm Kate Kennedy, your host. Be There in 5 is a long-form millennial zeitgeist and pop culture podcast. Thank you for being here. And today, instead of a deep dive, we'll do what I like to call a snorkel, which is the opposite, where we go through a lot of stuff and kind of skim the surface. And it's like my favorite thing to do ever, but I know these episodes aren't for everyone. So I'm trying something new. I feel like a youth pastor. My husband is out of his, he normally works from home, but he's out of office today. So I'm in his office and I'm using his standing desk. I mean, if there was ever a metaphor for us being quite different people, that he has a standing desk. Can you imagine? I mean, I know a lot of you do have a standing desk. What a commitment. What a, I don't know, a refresher course in the perils of knee locking. I mean, a lot of you walk on a treadmill, God love you, at your standing desk, but I don't have that kind of pat my head and rub my belly in a circle coordination where I could be typing coherent sentences while, you know, the ants go marching one by one, hurrah. Okay, that doesn't make sense, but my God, I can't get these stupid kid songs out of my head, kill me. Can we talk about this for 1 second? I really try to compartmentalize mom content because I know it's not for everybody, but I also know a lot of you have young children, and this is something I genuinely didn't understand until I was in this circumstance. You know, it started small, as all things do. You think, that won't be me. This is just a phase. I'm going to be able to preserve my headspace, my ears, my sanity. You get the Fisher-Price mat. You hear yourself humming Purple Monkey and the Bubblegum Tree. You realize head, shoulders, knees, and toes is suddenly back in your repertoire, and one fateful day, things were busy, need to get stuff done. A restless baby who's at the peak levels of alert and wanting to be engaged, yet can't really move himself around. And I've had countless friends that are parents say, Miss Rachel's content is enriching and educational. It's a good use of screen time. And I thought, let's see if he likes. Before I knew it, this woman who is so much better with children than I will ever be, takes virtual custody of my child while her songs live rent-free in my head. And since the lyrics are for children, they relate to very basic household things you do and see all the time. And I just can't even believe that already I don't know how to peel a banana like the normal human woman I once was. And now I'm just peel bananas, peel, peel bananas. I find myself actually paying attention and being like, well, I mean, yeah, if should I meet an elephant upon a summer's day, what would I do? What would I say? It's a fair question. And after some research, what I would do is probably first take a picture so I could be like, guys, look, I saw an elephant today. That was crazy. And then in terms of what I would say, it would be nothing because you really shouldn't startle elephants with loud noises, in case anybody was wondering. But I guess the point is, before I knew it, I don't have thoughts anymore. We don't even watch it that much. It's kind of like a early morning wake up bottle thing that's more enriching than I could ever be, because I just simply don't have the energy, patience, general pep in my step, nor angelic singing voice and headband collection of Miss Rachel. So we'll listen in the morning, and then, you know, the baby will go off in another room and like, I won't even notice that it's still on. There have been days where it's looped in the background and I've been working, and these songs have become so embedded in my head, they become indiscernible from like neutral tone room noise. But honestly, now I'm getting into it because it's giving me ideas. As I've told you, parenting is just truly some of my worst crowd work. It's like doing a bad Gallagher routine every day, all day, where you wildly experiment with physical comedy to a deadpan audience. And then one day you sneeze because you're cutting an onion and your baby's like, LMAO, cracking up. You're like, oh, well, I was overthinking that. You know, it's been helpful for me to see what beats he likes. It's helping me refine my craft in terms of, you know, how I approach the bars of the pout pout fish. And I don't know, one of the hardest parts is, I'm like, seriously, Daddy? Like, out of all the songs on, you know, these baby learning and learn to talk and whatever videos, brush your teeth you think is a banger? I mean, bless your heart, you don't have teeth. I don't know. Some days I'm like, I love you so much. You are literally perfect in every way. And I want to smell your head and kiss your cheeks and never give you personal space until my dying days. But I am concerned about your taste in music because, objectively speaking, Baby Put Your Pants On is not a better song than Hop Little Bunnies. But I knew this because he didn't kick once during the Eras tour. Like, which is what? I heard the bridge, you know, one of my surprise songs was Treacherous and, yeah, Unfazed in Utero. The good news is we are both equally triggered by the emotional warfare that is the Caterpillar song. Some people might think that you're a problem. Some people might call you strange. But Caterpillar, Caterpillar, things are going to change. And not only is it confusing that Green Puppet is not a caterpillar, you know, postpartum mothers are not looking to dine on a sandwich of sorrow. And Caterpillar is wedged between Mr. Golden Sun and Hop Little Bunnies. And also, it's kind of its own interesting form of pop culture that parents are a part of that I'd never really understood or knew about, like kid content. Rachel is kind of a fascinating phenomenon where she went from like preschool teacher to a mom who I believe her son was experiencing a speech delay. And so she started making videos that were teaching kids how to talk and sound out words and identify things, like a very patient enriching. And I believe she has like two master's degrees and she like actually knows how you're supposed to talk to kids and at what pace and how to repeat things and reinforce things. And it's pretty interesting to watch. And it, honest to God, helps me because I don't know how to talk to a kid and help them like build the first foundations of language. So it's kind of, yeah, interesting how it's now content that I watch with him. And all the while, I just kind of analyze so much about the videos because I'm myself. I also cannot believe how much money she must be making. I mean, like, let's see. She has 5.8 billion views, about 9 million subscribers. Average YouTube CPM, cost per thousand, I think it's like $6. We'll do a little less there, just so I'm not overinflating. But like, even the math would be like, and not to mention she started in February 2019. My rough estimate is that she makes like $700,000 to $750,000 a month. And just like YouTube ad revenue, like partner earnings. She's coming out with her own toys and a book. And honestly, I'm thrilled for her because this is the type of influence where people should not be mad at this. This is value creation. And this is the democratization of somebody who probably would have not been put on television. And if so, if they were given a break, would have been completely gouged in, you know, their contract. But she's using her expertise. Her and her husband can sing. They have a whole gang of people they looby-loo with in Central Park. And yeah, she's crushing it. I wonder if she's still teaching, though. I'm sure, like everyone I've ever come across, as you know, my accountant abandoned me to become a YouTube star. And my dentist, I had to leave when I found out how big he was on TikTok. All it takes, you know, is to imagine you unknowingly being in the background, you know, or like part of a softly blurred montage to the tune of, I think I like this little life. While one of your incisors is being aggressively flossed and then you're subsequently shamed for the light bleeding and asked if you ever floss. And yes, I do, but like you floss harder than me. But yeah, don't worry, I will move on from kids things in 2 seconds. This is such a niche take, but I know what everyone's thinking. Kate, we've been asking you, please speed rank the Miss Rachel for infant songs outside of the commonly known ones like Wheels on the Bus. And fine. I'll pick a handful, starting with the ones I like least. I think that the Zoo song and Going to the Beach, they're almost the same. They're really lacking lyrically. So those are pretty low on my list in addition to Caterpillar. And during those songs, it's like stock footage of people, like kids at the zoo and kids at the beach. And I feel weird just generally watching stock videos of children, and then I feel bad because I'm kind of judgy about their outfits, and then I'm looking at stroller brands, and I don't know. I think I'm partial to we're going to the beach because Miss Rachel, you know, love her consistency. She wears the same outfit every time, and I so appreciate her commitment because when she goes to the beach, she does put on shortles, which I just find adorable. And it's like a cartoon character thing when they slightly modify their uniform for their environment. And one other thing that's just funny to me about going to the beach, and I don't know if you guys like analyze them to this degree, but like she lives in New York. So when she's filming at the beach, it's, you know, she has all the stock footage of these beautiful beaches, but then the beach she films on is just considerably less nice than other beaches. And there's gobs and gobs of seaweed on the shoreline. And I have to assume she's like, I don't know, in the south shore of Long Island or something. The further and further you drive, you know, out on Long Island, you know, toward the Hamptons and stuff, the water gets clearer and clearer. But the being surrounded by washed up seaweed as she like attempts to make a small sandcastle in between the mounds of riffraff, it just kind of makes me laugh. Do you remember, if you guys ever used to watch How I Met Your Mother, before you realized like Barney Stinson isn't like funny, he's just alarming. I actually did really like that show when it was on in real time. I mean, the early seasons, mostly because of Robin Sparkles, Let's Go to the Mall. But remember they had like a joke episode. I think they were kind of making fun of like neighborhood mashup names like NoHo or Tribeca or Dumbo down under the Manhattan Bridge overpass. And they made up a fake neighborhood that somebody was looking for an apartment in. It was called Doa Satripla, like downwind of the sewage treatment plant. But that happens. It's like that actually is kind of a thing because the reason some of those beaches tend to accumulate so much seaweed. Well, let me fact check this. Yeah, marine biologists say nitrogen coming from the Bay Park sewage treatment plant fuels the growth of seaweed in the bay that then pushes it into the ocean, which is really gross. A combination of warm weather, heavy nutrient loading from back in the bay, and the physical movement of the water is accumulating large amounts of seaweed on beaches. Dead seaweed releases sulfide fumes. That's why sometimes there's a really bad seaweed stench. I mean, I don't know if that's like still happening, but I just think her beach is kind of hilariously not as nice as the other one. Anyways, what am I doing? No one cares. I'm almost done. I ended up moving rooms. I couldn't stand it anymore. I was having to talk kind of soft and slow because I was next to Teddy's room, and now I'm back down in my studio, so I'll sound like the maniac that I usually am. Okay, next I'm going to say Icky Sticky 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 Bubblegum makes that song stuck to your head. It's so annoying. It's so catchy. It's such a look in the mirror when she gets to the part where she says, makes your hand stuck to your grown-up. And you realize you're the grown-up and you're sitting across the room scrolling TikTok while your kid watches a woman on television interact with him. But the thing is, he's my son and we both, I think, genuinely value our space sometimes. Sometimes he's all up in my grill and we snuggle. And then sometimes I think he really just likes to be in his, I call it his office, his like skip-hop thing, with some good background tunes. He loves, you know, Wheels on the Bus. I mean, he's frothing at the mouth the second it comes on. Icky Sticky 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 Bubblegum is the ultimate earworm. It's just, I really don't hear my own thoughts anymore. I mostly hear that song. I'm also just like, for thematic purposes, going to include Bubble, 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 Pop in that one, which is actually a different song, even though it does sound like you're popping a bubblegum bubble. No need to analyze that further. Did I say this was about pop culture? I meant Bubble, 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 Pop Culture. We're just going to rank Miss Rachel songs, JK. Open, shut them, uninspired. The ones that are like commands, like put it in, not the best. Don't even get me started on the one with daddy's fingers. But to move on to lighter, more fun songs that I'm familiar with, if you're happy and you know it, classic. The more we get together, the happier we'll be, like, yes. Those are kind of standard campfire Girl Scout songs that I can sing along to and I like. But it's also not super accurate for what it's like to socialize when you're a kid, especially the closer you get to puberty, because your friends are my friends and my friends are your friends is, yeah, the official slogan of Popular Girls on opposite day. Usually people keep their circles pretty tight. That's why we have cliques. I am to like Caterpillar as my husband is to apples and bananas. I like to watch him wince during oopals and bononos. The simple swapping of vowels just really seems to hurt his ears. And he didn't know that song. And he's like, why are they making the words wrong? And I'm like, no, it's just, it actually is helpful because it teaches you vowels. And I actually remember doing this at like vacation Bible school. I think bononos just gives him cringe sweats in the way, you know, people talk about like the word moist or something. I don't know. And yeah, first I have to say brush your teeth. Not because ultimately what it's about is not me. It's about making Teddy smile. And that's what I care about. And he likes the sound, you know. Here we go. Looby Loo is okay. The visuals are interesting, mostly because you realize Miss Rachel is wearing a suspender overall. And it's a modern take on the overall, but not my favorite silhouette. And I also, when I watch it, I can't stop thinking about how funny it would be to watch grown adults, you know, sing and dance in a circle to Here We Go, Looby Loo, Here We Go, Looby Lie. And you listen a little closer and it's, you know, all on a Saturday night. You're like, these are your weekend plans. Tough stuff. What's interesting to me about this song, I feel like this is semi-relevant because campfire and like folk songs kind of fit into what I talked about in the book chapter, Slay All Day Bed. No, it was, sorry, it was originally called Slay All Day Bed, but I didn't want to appropriate drag culture in these trying times. I wanted to like kind of make fun of our usage of it, but then I was like, well, what if people think I'm serious? Back in the day bed, I talked about some people call it Stella Ella Ola and some people call it Quack Diddlyoso, and how depending on the region, I'd be like Quack Diddlyoso, quack, 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 senorita, rita, rita, rita. But like in the Northeast, where there, you know, is more Italian cultural influence, instead of like senorita, they'd say your mom smells like pizza. In San Diego, they say San Diego, ego, ego, ego. And then we said Rolo, 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 Rolo. And a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then you waterfall like 1, 2, 3, 4. And you know what I mean? You have your hands, palms up, and you slap. There's like regional differences everywhere, which I just think is like a beautiful thing, especially in the absence of social media. That we've shared lore from like YMCA and Girl Scout camps and day camps and stuff. And there's like Ms. Mary Mack, you know, you play slide, there's Concentration 64. I was wondering if we ever elaborated on the podcast because the lyrics are so obscure. And it's one of the few hand slapping games where you cannot find a lot about its origins. I'm curious if any of you have heard your kids or tweens or teens or whoever doing the one that is called like There's a Place on Mars or something like that. And it's kind of funny because now I bet like the people trying to ban books about a tree, maybe we'll get into that later, but we used to do this hand slapping game a lot at the pool. The lyrics were There's a Place on Mars where the women smoke cigars and the men wear bikinis and the children drink martinis. Can you imagine at a school board meeting? The men wear bikinis, the children drink martinis. Indoctrinating our children to dress as the other gender, to partake in libations. It's like, Well, why do you hear that? There's another version. Wasn't it like, there's a place in France where the naked ladies dance. There's a hole in the wall where the men can see it all. Oh my God. I just realized that's also the beat of that Kesha song. What's it called? Hold on. Take it off. Goes on to say, every breath you take is enough to kill a snake. When the snake is dead, you put mustard on its head. When the mustard dries, you put diamonds in his eyes. When the diamonds crack, you put ketchup on its back. I don't know. I always get confused with this one. Anytime I venture into like day camp, campfire, hand slapping folklore, I get a million emails being like, it's when the mustard dries. We count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And like, yeah, I believe you. I hear you and I see you. These are the regional differences that make up the lore that is folk that we so treasure because it is both universally shared and somehow regionally distinct. Oh, it's also known as the Snake Charmer's Dance. Well, now this seems like it might not be appropriate. Dang, a lot of people have sampled the Snake Charmer's Dance song. Kesha, Lana Del Rey, Destiny's Child, Fiona Apple, Criminal? I can't even understand that. Anyway. I was expecting to honestly, do you remember the Mandy Moore song Nobody Talks About? I know that we're forever grateful for Candy. I Want to Be With You from Center Stage, My God, A Walk to Remember. It gave us that scene from Laguna Beach where Christina thought she was trying out for Wicked with that, you know, casting director that had that those crazy spermy eyebrows. But I kind of wonder if Christina's dad, pastor of the Crystal Cathedral, just like paid an extra to pretend she was auditioning for Broadway. But anyway, Mandy Moore had a song that like sampled a vaguely kind of Middle Eastern riff that now I wonder if it would be considered culturally appropriative. It was called In My Pocket, and it was kind of a banger. But like, how many times can I say banger in one episode? The way I think of like songs and stuff in categories of things that are vaguely similar, but I can't like exactly articulate why. And there was a time have music videos that were like very focused on like belly dancers and stuff. And the way I'm even talking about it is probably problematic. I just, you know, need to express these things in case anybody else knows what I'm talking about. There are really three pop songs that like define this for me, which are Mandy Moore's In My Pocket, Selena Gomez's When You're Ready, Come and Get It, and Christina Milian's Dip It Low. This is a tangent within a tangent within a tangent, but we're just going to go for it today. This is my happy place. I appreciate being along for the ride, or one might also say in my pocket. Let me get to the chorus. She's like 16. How much for your love? So that is cited as having Middle Eastern, North African, and Asian influences. And it's just a very weird music video and a song nobody ever talks about. It's almost, sometimes I get a pit in my stomach when I think about like a pop star's song that I think they thought was going to be like it, but then it really kind of fell flat. Like Jessica Simpson's A Public Affair. Or, you know, when somebody does like an emotional song that's a response to something and it kind of falls flat, that really stresses me out. Actually, to use Jessica Simpson, I kind of feel like Nick Lachey's What's Left of Me was just such a good song and just did so well following the divorce. And, you know, at the time we were a little bit, you know, we were pro Justin. We were like, oh, poor Nick. Jessica's so immature. You know, but now you watch Newlyweds and you're like, yikes, yikes, yikes. He's like so dismissive and antagonistic and controlling. And now, you know, he's a reality TV titan with his wife, Vanessa, who is just obsessed with making babies in every reunion, except this past one, she was better. But he does What's Left of Me. And obviously we saw Jessica Simpson do that stunning rendition of, is it Patty Griffin's Let Him Fly? A cappella. But then she came out with that song, I Belong to Me, that was kind of supposed to be her What's Left of Me. And it just wasn't a hit. And but you knew she was like really trying to do something. And like that bums me out. Anyway, sorry, I got off topic. But I don't even know why I'm playing you this. But it's another example of like one hit mumbler, how I have categories of songs in my head that like kind of have a similar vibe. And yeah, I don't know. I just think about this sometimes if you want to revisit these music videos, because the songs are quite good, but I the content's a bit questionable. I think you guys get what I mean. The song was pretty good. So was AM to PM. To loop back to the Snake Charmer song, I feel kind of funny about now. It was sampled by so many things, including Istanbul, Not Constantinople, which is a very odd song. But as they say, that's nobody's business but the Turks. Remember when Lorelai, she made like a pretty solid Istanbul, Not Constantinople reference when she was at that dinner with that pretentious Harvard family? With Rory. That was such an interesting scene where Lorelai felt insecure. The episode's called Application Anxiety. And Lorelai felt insecure about not having more sophisticated interests. And it's very much what I was talking about in the Pumpkin Spice Girl chapter of my book, where depending on the things you reference, people will glean something about your level of intellect or sophistication. But what's interesting about that episode is you're watching two people have conversations and quickly referencing things that they like and parts of culture they consume. But Lorelai's painted as being this like unsophisticated, kind of pedantic mom of Rory who can hold her own in conversations about Shakespeare and literature. But what should really be focused on, it's not the references themselves, but the speed and ability to make connections. And Lorelai is completely on par with everyone else in that room. They just don't value her interests and her references, you know? Anyway, can't get on that tangent. So the way the Snake Charmer beat ends of the hand slapping song is the mustard dries, diamonds in its sides, diamonds crack. You put ketchup on its back, and when the ketchup fades, you call this King of Spades. When the King of Spades comes, you freeze. It's basically like the longest, most roundabout game of freeze with nonsensical lyrics. If I remember correctly, I was just trying to tell you what I called a speed ranking of Miss Rachel songs and something I promised I wasn't going to continue because I know not everybody wants to hear kids stuff, but I'm trying to lean more into the life phase I'm in and just embrace it. I think I've been scared because I saw so much drop off when I first got pregnant and had a kid because of Childless Millennial, and I felt like ashamed or weird or something that people wouldn't like me anymore because there was some new element to my identity. And then I felt really frustrated about being reduced to only the mom part of my life when it's not really the majority of my content. But I also get it and it's fine. But also, I do think that even when I was like 22, I would have enjoyed a ranking of nursery rhymes because I've always been me. I don't know about you, but I'm feeling 22. Everything will be all right. If you just get to the goddamn origin story of Luby Lou. Wow, wow, wow. Am I excited about this new advertiser? It's only appropriate that this snorkel where we cycle through thousands of topics and just to kind of skim the surface is brought to you by none other than Skims. In the process of overhauling all my undergarments postpartum, given that not everything is as comfortable in crevices as it once was and I needed completely new sizes, Skims Fits Everybody collection was something I was interested in. I've had friends and influencers alike tell me about the Fits Everybody collection, and oh my gosh, I don't know where or how they found this fabric. It's not quite like anything I've seen in the category before. It's incredibly stretchy, incredibly soft. The best way I can describe it is it like melts on your body and you completely forget you're wearing it. And for my situation down there post-delivery, I really needed stuff that I could not feel. And once I started going to like events and out to other stuff and had to tour and whatnot, I was like, I need to get back in the thong game. And sure enough, the Skims Fits Everybody thong. It is the most barely there one I've put on since. And they have a high-waisted thong that I'm like, this makes so much sense. Everything I own is high-waisted. And it is just so comfortable. It drove me to replace all of my thongs. And that's not a joke. I'm one of those people that would hold on to them for a little too long from my days at the Galleria, digging through drawers of less than desirable prints. You know how some types of underwear tend to go where they're not supposed to? This somehow manages to find its way where it's supposed to. And it's just not fussy. I wish I had done this while I was pregnant and postpartum, like earlier on, because the cool thing about the fabric is that it like fits in the correct places as is, but it stretches to twice its size. I just want something that works long-term, is sustainable, and is like highly functional for different types of clothing and pants and dresses. And I also love their scoop bralette. I was pretty suspicious about ordering a bralette because I just historically don't have a lot of luck. And it's also super comfortable and barely there, which I'm kind of confused by because the fabric is incredibly thin and breathable, but it still offers support and the extra large fits me perfectly. I guess that means when they say fits everybody. Anyway, you guys, the Fits Everybody collection is available in sizes XXX to 4X. You can shop now at skims.com. Plus, get free shipping on orders over $75. After you place your order, be sure to let them know I sent you. Select podcast in the survey and be sure to select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. Thanks to Skims for supporting Be There in 5. I'm always really impressed when I'm talking to somebody and they're like, are you a Virgo? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I am. Are you a Virgo? And they're like, no. And I'm like, well, how do you know what other people's signs do? Because I think astrology is kind of like a group photo and that you only look at yourself. But then I realized I'm a monster and a lot of people study all the signs and stars. And that's why I'm excited to learn more and listen to a new astrology podcast I wanted to tell you about. It's called Stars and Stars with Issa. And in each episode, astrologer Issa Nakazawa sits down with the biggest stars of our time, uncovering surprising insights hidden within their birth charts while shedding light on their life paths and purposes. Issa, hit me up if you ever want to interview a fledgling podcaster. But I guess it's not called Stars and Fledgling Podcasters with Issa. But I'm excited to hear what the cosmos have to say about guests like W. Kamau Bell, Gia Tolentino, oh my God, love her, Monet, and more. You'll laugh, cry, and maybe even learn a little bit more about yourself. Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa wherever you listen to podcasts. All I was trying to do is tell you simply that I think it's confusing that Here We Go, Looby Loo. Also, half the lyrics are that of the Hokey Pokey. And I just don't feel like we're talking about that when we're watching the Star Trek. God, sorry. Maybe after you put your left foot in, you put your left foot out, you give your foot a shake, shake, shake. Like while you're at it, can you know, just take me out. What are we talking about? Yep, no, I don't think I'm done. Because when you hear these songs a lot, you really are like, what the hell are they talking about? And now sometimes things can have like really dark origins, like Ring Around the Rosie. Looby Loo is like from 18th or 19th century. And it's that term means is like a clumsy, stupid fellow. And a Lubin is like, I guess, a generic name for a country bumpkin. So it's like country bumpkins getting like clumsy, stupid, sloppy. So it sounds like it's a, you know, an old tune about a bunch of bumpkins getting ham-boned on a weekend. I don't say ham-boned. I don't know why I said that. But it's often misattributed to this song from the 60s called Loop-de-Loop. But Loop-de-Loop is based off of Looby Loo. And there was this guy who was like a backup singer for like some of the greats like Dionne Warwick, who went by the stage name Johnny Thunder. And he was trying to like make it big. And he wrote like huge, important song. I think he wrote like Tell Him, which is like an iconic song. But he was a one-hit wonder, and his only song was Loop-de-Loop. His producer gave it to him, and he thought it was a joke because it was based on a kid's folk song. But they made it into a real song, put it into like, you know, radio play, and it got to number 4 on the Billboard charts and was like a huge song. And listening to this song...
Hold it just a minute and watch me now.
Sometimes I'm listening to oldie stations and I'm like, were adults like the 50s and 60s so fundamentally different than we are now that like they're a lot of the music, it's giving Vacation Bible School or like Schoolhouse Rock. I mean, like actual rock, like legitimate, you know, perceived as legitimate rock and roll, the Beatles, which is a very common name five songs type of band of my youth. And their early stuff, like I Want to Hold Your Hand, like Yellow Submarine is just, some people think it's about an acid trip, but on the surface, it's just, literally it's subaquatic and not the surface, but metaphorically on the surface, it's just a song about a yellow submarine. Being a, you know, a teen, riding the back of my parents' Windstar, listening to oldie stations, my taste du jour was like to the window, to the wall, just sweat dropped down my balls. And it's like, tie a yellow ribbon round the old oak tree. And I'm just like, wow, were people honestly that wholesome that was like a banger? Oh my God, I need to stop saying banger. Okay, last thing about Miss Rachel. Teddy loves Brush Your Teeth, that song. And it's sung by Jules. Teddy is like drawn to Jules. And before I had a kid, I like remember seeing TikToks or something about some outcry with somebody in Miss Rachel's like singing troupe. And I was just looking this up this week because I was like, oh my God, this better not be about Jules. But it was. And two things, each more ridiculous than the other. I saw people bitching on Reddit about Jules having a lip ring and that being a bad influence, as if, give me a break. I guess there was drama about Jules because Jules uses they, them pronouns. And since people can't just let other people live their lives and make choices that have absolutely no bearing on their life, people were complaining on principle that Jules goes by they, them. They're singing songs, just existing. They're not singing songs about pronouns. It has absolutely nothing to do with the content. Somebody just went looking at the website and decided to make an issue of it for absolutely no reason. Then some people hate other people who do things differently and think they should not be allowed to simply because they, I was going to say disagree, but my bigger argument would be they don't understand and don't care to take the time to try. It makes me feel crazy because I'm like, these parents are trying to protect their kids allegedly, but like kids don't know to judge people for having piercings or tattoos or an interesting haircut. Like, will I tell my future daughter to, you know, proceed with caution if she wants to date somebody with an eyebrow ring? Sure. I mean, only male eyebrow rings. Female eyebrow rings don't bother me. But I think what's so interesting is when, in the name of allegedly protecting kids, they're actually teaching kids how to hate people or to judge them by reducing their character to small exterior traits that really don't mean anything about what kind of person they are. And isn't that a far more damaging lesson than simply looking at a lip ring and being a toddler that doesn't know or care what it is? Like worried about, you know, protecting your child because a person you will never meet has preferred pronouns that don't affect your life for reasons that you don't even have to explain to your kid because they wouldn't understand because they cannot talk and are just enjoying a nursery rhyme? You think your child's going to be indoctrinated by a lip ring and not a manic, depressive green puppet singing a song about a caterpillar? The complaints about these songs are just, they range from hilarious to problematic. This one says, I'm not a fan of the song Catching a Baby Bumblebee and Won't Mommy Be Happy With Me? And then the bee stings you and then you smash it in your hands. Or the shark snaps that fishy out of the sea. Some are a little dark. My son cries when Jules sings We Are the Dinosaurs Marching, so I have to fast forward. I believe her video is very educational, but some are a little questionable. I'm like, what? See, this is where I'm like, Greg, go easy on the banunus. You don't want to be like, well, that's not proper English and seem like the person being like, this is instructing people to bring home a baby bumblebee into my house. And I know I'm mommy and I wouldn't be proud of him. Did you see that this week? This makes me not a proud Virginian. This Virginia is for haters, apparently. A school district in Virginia suspended a reading program after complaints flooded over a children's book. Several parents accused the book's message of promoting transgenderism and non-binary pronouns. The youth novel is Wish Tree. It was a New York Times number one bestseller in 2017. The story is narrated by a tree named Red. The issue, red oak trees have reproductive parts that can pollinate and flower simultaneously. In the book, the tree claims an identity that is both female and male and female in response to diverse pronouns. Call me she, call me he, anything will work. But like, that's something that happens with trees. I think I read they have four systems of reproduction. Some trees have both male and female flowers and can self-pollinate. Some plants have male and female plant genitalia on the same flower. And it's just confusing because the woke left isn't responsible for the self-pollination of an oak tree. You know who's responsible for that? It's their favorite person in literally the entire universe, God. But also, like, trees aren't humans. I think most kids understand that. Even though the giving tree works overtime to teach kids a lesson that, like, okay, and listen, you know I am one of Shell's angels. Where the sidewalk ends is where my brain begins because I've been insufferably rhyming ever since. But the giving tree, I guess it's supposed to be a story of unconditional love. But reading it, I was like, this is the most, like, I don't know why I ever was into that book or what I thought it was, but I remember it being like so meaningful. But now as a parent, I'm like, wait, this is the most cynical look, like, depiction of parenthood imaginable, where the tree is the parent incapable of giving their child everything in there. And I don't know if it's supposed to be a lesson about spoiling or how parents will do everything for you and it's completely lost on the child until the parent's gone. But like reading it back, I don't know. It went into my pile of, you know, harming of the self on the shelf, the least fun Elf on the Shelf's diabolical, seasonally agnostic cousin. But no, I have a shelf of books where I'm like, no, the HSP in me can't do it. I don't know how to explain this to my child. Or it's just caterpillar-esque emotional warfare. We're like, I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. Makes me want to die. The stuff I hear about school boards and PTA is surprising to me when I think about parents of young kids now being more like Gen X and millennials. Because I am in a quite liberal bubble, but even I see on Nextdoor the things parents say about the local elementary schools. And I'm like, oh my God, I would never, ever be able to navigate this without feeling so disgusted and ragey. It's like I always will associate that behavior with generations like steeped in their traditions and inflexible in their ways. But I'm like, well, no, parental outcry about this right now is the parents are Gen X, they're millennials. Again, I'm in such a bubble. Like, it's just so hard for me to imagine like more modern people behaving in such a narrow-minded manner as products of like the information age where we know better and can do better. But it's like when you look into book banning, it's like actually not even the individual parents contesting titles is pretty uncommon. It's all like these conservative interest groups are able to garner so much funding and power and organize around these principles that have nothing to do with protecting children and everything to do with discriminating against other people. But I was looking into this recently, and it's like in really specific places that aren't that surprising. I mean, four states accounted for 86% of book bans last year. But according to NBC News, the reported books by parents, more than 50% of the books being banned centered around an LGBTQ character and children of color. And this is like dark, but I thought like a clever way to frame it in terms of what's trying to be done here. I think that article called it like a don't ask, don't tell, don't shelve approach in terms of the availability of ideas. And I don't know, you guys. I think the data involved with book bans showcases such an interesting correlation to what happened during the pandemic when institutional distrust was at an all-time high, when conspiracies abound, when people organized around misinformation campaigns. And I mean, this is nuts. Okay, year 2000, the number of unique titles challenged in the U.S., there were 378. 2010, the number of unique titles challenged in the U.S., 262. In 2020, even, it was 223 unique titles, new unique books challenged in the U.S. for that whole year. 2021, there were 1,858 books challenged in the U.S. 2022, 2,571 books. What is happening? That, the overturning of Roe v. Wade, like there is a clear shift happening in so many different areas. And I think now thinking about this before was just like, it made me mad on principle and it's concerning. But as a parent, I find it abhorrent. Anyway, actually back to Jules on Miss Rachel for a second, because this is relevant to another topic I wanted to cover this week, which is I went to Olivia Rodrigo's Guts tour. I think that like seeing people bitch about Jules having a lip ring or going by they, them pronouns. Let's say it's not about just being hateful and discriminatory and you like really are scared for your children. You know, reading through comments that refer to Jules, it's kind of like they're playing the guitar. Like, truly, please tell me the reason you would be afraid of somebody playing a guitar who behind the scenes goes by they, them pronouns, to me, has a lot more to do with you not understanding what it means or like why. And I say that because there was this whole like thread about how the problem was Jules projecting quote unquote unnatural sexual preferences on children. What? We're talking about gender. No one said a thing about sex. It's because people don't even take 2 seconds to understand what this means. Like, let's say I was going to extend you an ounce of my empathy or understanding and, like, walk you through this. The saddest part is, like, if people understood things, they wouldn't be scared of them. And especially in the context of a toddler or baby watching a video, they have no idea what's going on. Just walk on by. Like, why? I don't get it. And that's, and now I'll get into my Olivia Rodrigo convo. And don't even get me started on people thinking this is the type of thing that harms their children, but they're like also really into guns. Icky, 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 sticky love of guns. My kid will never go to your house. Like, guys, I would never, ever make it listening to people bitch on a school board in a PTA meeting. Are you kidding me? Okay, read the Olivia Rodrigo concert. Wow, I also like didn't see this episode going in like the full direction of like random topics semi-related to parenting and kids, but I'm kind of enjoying this because I'm half just complaining about things we all know to be true. You know, I don't need to tell you guys this stuff goes on and how wrong it is. But in case you want to vent along with me, the Olivia Rodrigo concert was interesting because it just felt like, I was like, am I crazy? In terms of what the expectation now is for everybody to be operating in a way that accommodates kids instead of the responsibility being on the parent to involve them or omit them from spaces and or contextualize the things that are too mature in those spaces. Do I think people should be allowed to, you know, show their junk in public? No. Do I think that there are many, many, many spaces where children should not be involved and things are too mature? Absolutely. But there's a difference between kids being allowed into or having access to adult spaces and adults trying to legitimately like manipulate and indoctrinate children with like evil things and inappropriate themes. Remember when people were like, you know, the Barbie's a kid's toy. Why are there inappropriate jokes in the movie? Why is it like about the patriarchy and gender and feminism? And, you know, if they knew kids were going to watch it, then why'd they make suggestive jokes or have like an F-bomb or whatever? And it's like, oh my God, it's PG-13. Like, this is what ratings are for. Like, it is your choice as a parent what you want to expose them to and how you want to explain it, or if you withhold it entirely. And things like art can be made about themes related to kids. It just makes more sense that you handle how you deal with that with your kid rather than demand it's not allowed to exist. And like the Olivia Rodrigo concert was so interesting to me because I heard about the controversy with her partnering with local abortion funds and having like booths at her concert. And it was positioned as they were like handing out condoms and Plan B like willy-nilly to passersby. And yeah, I mean, I'm a progressive gal, but no, I don't want that being handed to my child that I haven't explained that to yet, right? But that's not what was happening. There were booths available for people to come up to who had that available, but like it wasn't necessarily that aggressive. And Olivia is a 21-year-old woman whose generation will be profoundly affected by these restrictions to our reproductive freedom. And it's very important and cool, I think, that she partners with, you know, funds and local organizations that campaign for and provide information and resources about women's sexual and reproductive health. And like, just as you could go up to a booth if you were interested, you could also walk on by. And I wouldn't have noticed the booze there at all unless I had already heard this in the news. And it just like wasn't a big deal. And it's like interesting that she, you know, had her team had to instruct the organizations to not offer those, to not offer Plan B or whatever at the booths because of her demographic so young. But part of me was like, it kind of sucks. Not sucks. Like, I'm sure she loves her young fans, but she's not still a Disney star. She's not on the only mouthier title than All Too Well, Taylor's version, 10-minute version from The Vault as High School Musical, the musical, the show. Like, she grew up. I would assume she's trying to target more of a demo that's her age, but it just so happens a lot of young girls love her, just like a lot of girls love Taylor Swift, and she sings Fuck the Patriarchy, among other things, at her concert, because she's allowed to. It's her art. made for people her age. And if parents want to allow their young children to listen to and participate in adult spaces, it's up to them to explain it to them, you know? And like, I will say though, Olivia Rodrigo's fan base was like so young. Like I thought way younger than the Eras Tour, like on average. I was like, who are these parents that are complaining? Like if you, like your child's literally going to be in an arena with people screaming fame fucker at the top of their lungs during Vampire. The second stanza of the concert is bad idea, right? And she says, it's like the 10th word is like, she says, and I'm all fucked up. Like she curses a lot. And I don't know. I just don't know what people are doing. I just don't know what all this complaining's about. And, you know, as I do, because I'm a masochist, I'm just always so curious to see, like, is there like an actual outcry from parents, or is the media like overblowing this for sport? And I think what was most alarming is like, first of all, it's your choice to take them to the concert. And second of all, it's your choice to walk by and explain it to them if you so choose. But the scariest part was how a lot of people didn't seem to understand in like the comments and on Twitter threads, like what Plan B actually is and does. And I bring this, loop this back to like, you know, pronouns and people being like, oh, Jules and sexual preferences. And it's like, that's not what this is. The same thing with Plan B. It's like, I think you would be less scared of it if you just took 2 seconds to understand how it works, because so many people were calling it the abortion pill as if their kids were being handed pills that would terminate an existing pregnancy. And all Plan B does is prevent you from ovulating. In fact, it doesn't even work if you take it after you're ovulating. And it just goes to show like this, the misunderstanding about how like literally human reproduction works is so alarming. If there are people that have taken birth control or like understand how that works and they're like not too far gone, it's like the hormones in the birth control pill, most of them safely stop ovulation from happening. What does no ovulation mean? There's no egg for sperm to fertilize, so pregnancy cannot happen. There's no existing pregnancy being terminated. Like, what are you talking about? And like any other birth control method, it's just interfering before an egg could be fertilized. And, you know, should obviously be used as a backup method, not only because it's expensive and not everybody has access to it, but also there's a lot of like nuances with it. Obviously, its efficacy depends on how soon after you take it, if you have ovulated yet. And there's data recently that shows like it actually is less effective depending on your weight. I think I read that there's another type you should take if you're over 165 pounds, which I am. And I'm like, oh, I never, like, even I didn't know that. Like, anyways, to bring this all together, it all comes back to like education and access to accurate information and how the like stigmas and lack of explanations that, you know, our generation is marked by is now, you know, I don't think going to help how we break through and, you know, undo a lot of the dangerous legislation that isn't based in science or fact, but in stigma. And I'm like, God, there's probably actually so many millennials that are products of just having so much information restricted from them and the abstinence only education era and beyond, that like, this is just going to perpetuate if we don't do things like have people with huge audiences being brave enough to put access points to information and resources about reproductive health. Anyway, you guys, I think Olivia, she's really good. And I'm excited for where her career is going to go, because she's kind of carved out something unique in this era, I think, that really makes her distinct. And she has some of like the sharp edges and female rage that I enjoyed, but like didn't understand and wasn't old enough to participate in, with like Alanis Morissette or Fiona Apple or whatever. But now I just feel it in my bones. And it was nice to scream at the end of All American Bitch. What an amazing song, by the way. Like that song is so creative in terms of what she's trying to convey. Yeah, she just has really good, like, thoughtful breakup postmortems, like Traitor and Happier, that kind of allow you to experience the full range of your emotions from, like, screamy, almost off-putting rage to, you know, saccharine sentimentality. And we can be both, and she is both. And the overarching vibe of the show definitely skews angsty and slightly alternative, like from the lighting down to the dancers, but it all manages to elicit joy because there's joy in expression and exercising our range. I love nothing more than watching groups of girlfriends heal through like pop music, you know, and watching moms and daughters better relate to one another, or dads better understand their daughter's world. And I think that pop music, pop punk rock music, whatever you categorize her as, like, is often fueled by the enthusiasm of young people. And as much as I was like, whoa, this is a young crowd, I just loved looking out at the crowd and remembering how this very enthusiasm of young people creates so much space for connection. And it was beautiful to see. There were 12 songs from Guts. 9 out of the 11 songs from Sour got played. And it felt like a pretty tight set list, actually. I took a merch break during, I think, Logical and Enough For You. I was trying to come back during Lacey, but I misfired a bit with the timing. And I also am not as obsessed with that song as other people. But I just think she is a star and I want great things for her. I don't know. Sometimes it's fun to kind of get back in that teenage-y headspace. And I was talking to a friend that I was there with, and we were saying how it's almost alarming sometimes how looking out at the girls, like, screaming at the top of their lungs some of these lyrics, I'm like, how dare people dismiss their heartbreak and their feelings as being overdramatic or trying to force perspective onto them that these things won't matter, when the very reason they feel that intensity of emotion is because there's a lack of experience and perspective. So therefore, these things really, really matter to them, right? And the seismic nature of breakups at that age and having a way to like process those feelings out loud, like, it's just so important. What wasn't important is I just, you know, went on like a 10-minute detailed journey of my experience eating traveling nachos at the Olivia Rodrigo concert because my seats included food and drink. My mom was here this week and she's like, I don't know if you should tell people that. It's not like very relatable or accessible. And I'm like, that my tickets to an Olivia Rodrigo concert had food and drink. So I just took that part out of the episode, but now I'm laughing because I was like, wait, I don't actually think anyone's going to think it's aspirational that I ate out of a Frito bag with a fork. Everyone spends their money differently. But what was funny about these seats is that it wasn't like a box. It was like kind of like this semi-private like club tier that like anyone can buy tickets at. They're just pricier. But my experience at the Eras Tour has profoundly skewed my concept of what is like a steal when it comes to concert tickets. So anyway, it was just kind of funny because the demo was so young. It was like kid food. And literally, in the past 2 days, I feel like I've like slept in a bag of rice, like a soggy iPhone. I've been sucked dry of every ounce of water because I had so much sodium at the Olivia Rodrigo concert. I had, you know, mom's night out. It's been a while. I had like two and like a quarter margaritas with a full salted rim and a hot dog and traveling nachos, also known as Frito pie, also known as walking taco, I think. Also known as something else. I think it's regional, but also I don't think traveling nachos is regional because I've never heard anyone call it that who didn't go to like Henrico County Public Schools. And it kind of makes me laugh thinking about how maybe we were worried on infringing upon the Frito pie. And therefore my school, you know, did a Dr. Perky, you know, Dr. Perky is to Dr. Pepper as traveling nachos is to Frito pie. Regardless, I mean, yeah, it's a sedimentary rock of sodium. It's just layer after layer after layer of salty adornment inside a Frito bag. And I really felt my age when I, you know, during one of the songs I wasn't as familiar with, I took the time to look up what the aluminum foil-ish lining inside of a Frito bag is and if it's there to provide a hospitable environment for traveling nachos, because not every interior of a chip bag is like silver metallic foil. And as I was sitting there eating it, I was kind of, it felt a little melty. And I was like, is this carcinogenic? Like, is it cool to just dump piping hot beef and nacho cheese into plastic and then use it as a bowl? And I just wish I had the naivete of youth and could not overthink things, because I just was watching 11-year-olds Frito pie to the face just getting lettuce in their braces, not having a care in the world. And I just miss the version of myself that honestly couldn't look things up. Like, eat the melted plastic. You already don't have a great GPA. I'm not sure if the BPA is going to make a huge dent at this point. So yeah, I just felt like I wanted to express that that was my bigger takeaway than the sodium hangover from the traveling nachos. But that is, I guess, kind of fitting that like a cuisine I hadn't really had since high school. Like they took me right back to like paying for school lunch. I assume most people's schools, you know, there were these days everyone would look forward to, and it was like the day you don't pack a lunch and you buy lunch at school. Even though a lot of people never packed lunches, but it was actually like not that cheap now that I think about it for the time. So I usually was a packer. But yeah, people love traveling nacho day. Oh my God, at my high school, the biggest thing was chicken parm day. Have we talked about this? Have we talked about my public school chicken parmesan, you guys? Like, my high school had the best chicken parmesan. I know, as an adult, I have the same tendencies I've always had literally my whole life. Like, I've always felt kind of uninspired by a packed lunch. Like, I like to look forward to meals, and any meal I've had a hand in making is just simply not worth the hype. And I loved buying lunch in the cafeteria. I'm always so impressed by the cost leadership of people that pack a lunch. I think I have a truly innate passion for takeout food and food that I did not make. In that it just tastes better to me. I don't know what to do about it. Well, specifically, there are three things that just simply taste better made by somebody else outside of the home or brought into the home made by somebody else, which is coffee and any of related beverages. And a salad that someone else makes at a third-party vendor is so exciting, and I just don't really need to elaborate further. Similarly, I'd say a sandwich too. A sandwich made somewhere else is just, whew, worlds better than anything I could ever have in the home. I literally have dreams about my high school chicken parmesan in ways that, like, if it wasn't weird, I'd like probably go by and just see if anybody would notice if I sat at a table and ordered lunch. You know what's funny is I wasn't even thinking about this, but I said that I could make meat better at home, and I really can. Why? Because of Pusher Pox. It's really taught me to prepare stuff at home. And yeah, I'm feeling grateful that maybe one of these days I can try to recreate the chicken parm of my dreams. This episode is brought to you by ButcherBox, as is the meal I'm about to make when I'm done recording this ad. My husband and I were just like, because he's been out of town all week and we have no food here. But we found some tortillas and cheese. And lo and behold, of course, we have chicken in the freezer. Because of ButcherBox, it's always saving the day just when we don't think we have anything to eat. It saves us a trip to the grocery store because ButcherBox allows you to easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. With 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised, crate-free, and wild-caught seafood, humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones, delivered right to your doorstep with free shipping always. You can curate your box or get customized plans designed by the team at ButcherBox. And they give you a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. At our grocery store, when you toss on the, you know, words wild caught or free range or grass fed, grass finished, like it can double or triple the price of the meat. It's, I'm not always clear on its origins. And even though in like my heart and mind, I want to be investing in the more ethical meat selections, I sometimes like can't justify the price. Then I feel stressed out and then I'm irritated. I just like love that my grocery store trips do not involve buying meat. I just have it when I need it. We make a lot of the chicken wings in the air fryer. I recently tried their frozen chicken nuggets and I was like such a huge fan. I'm excited to have those for when Teddy's in, you know, peak nugget age. And I just sent a box to my sister for the first time, which I'm like, why did I never send this to Kelly? Because she has this like indoor grill that she's obsessed with. And she's been sending me pics and commentary of her very carnivorous week, being super stoked to have all this steak and ground beef and sausage, among other things, from her butcher box. But it's kind of my favorite gift to send for like a dude who loves to grill, or whether it's a father-in-law, if you have aging parents, or if you yourself or somebody is a new parent, and you want them to have food available, but like not cooked in pre-made recipes that'll spoil quickly. I just think ButcherBox like makes a lot of sense as a gift too, if you want my 2 cents. With ButcherBox, you don't have to worry about what's for dinner. ButcherBox is offering our listeners their choice of a weeknight meal essential 3 pounds of chicken thighs, 2 pounds of ground beef, or 1 pound of premium steak tips for free in every order for a whole year. Plus, get $20 off your first order. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/bethereinfive and use code bethereinfive to choose your free offer and get $20 off. This episode is brought to you by Nutrafol. Remember last week when Michelle said, you know, would you ever chop your hair? And I said, my hair is my entire identity. If you are like me and your hair is like your security blanket, I'm sure you can understand how alarming it feels when you experience hair thinning or shedding. And this for me was honestly scary. I think many of us postpartum gals have seen a day, have had that one infamous shower where you're like, oh my God, is there a small woodland creature in and around my shower drain? And no, it's the hair on my head. Not to be gross. Nutrafol has taught me a lot about this and that it's a lot more common than I thought. Hair thinning happens to approximately 1 in 2 women. And if you're among them, you're not alone. I'm there too. So are most of my friends. And it's normal, but not always openly talked about. And going through it can feel a bit lonely and frustrating. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding. And their whole body approach multi-targets underlying root causes like stress, hormone fluctuations, nutrient gaps for visibly thicker, stronger hair. So this is not just for postpartum women. That's the type I take. But they have different supplements that target different hair-related issues. They have their traditional formula. They have postpartum. They have menopause. They have formulas for different lifestyles, like if you have a plant-based diet. And while many supplements rely on ingredient studies, Nutrafol clinically tests final formulations to ensure their efficacy. And in a clinical study, 86% of women reported improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol Women's Hair Growth Supplement for 6 months. And I showed you on Instagram, I pursued them to work with them on Instagram because I was like, I actually want to be able to show people like where I was experiencing like recession in my hairline and how it's growing back. I think I felt so freaked out. I just wanted people to know, like, this is not an ad in vain. This is a product I really use. You can take their hair wellness quiz on Nutrafol.com for a personalized hair health plan based on your specific root causes and see results in 3 to 6 months. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code BETHEREIN5. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code BETHEREIN5. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code BETHEREIN5. But I guess it's something I haven't really thought about asking you guys before, by way of nostalgia, what your hero school cafeteria lunches were. And I wonder if ours were similar, you know, within and across America. And if now they're healthier. I mean, we had a Taco Bell in my high school. Is that normal? In elementary school, I loved square pizza. And one of my favorite lines I wrote in my entire book that I do not know why, but it makes me cry because that's how much I associate like the whimsiness of nostalgia and girlhood with cafeteria food. In the opening poem of section one, I say, may your milk be chocolate, your pizza be square. And to me, this is it's like the ultimate Irish blessing or something, of like a beautiful way to convey that you want someone to have a great day, a great time, a great life. It just at that age, that's like the best thing I could say to someone. And I don't know if that makes sense to anybody else, but I remember Courtney went through and she was so sweet and copied and pasted like her favorite parts of the book, because at the time I was just like struggling, you know, nobody had really read it and I just didn't know if anyone would care. And one of the first things she told me she liked with like a little like crying eye face was, may your milk be chocolate, your pizza be square. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited you understand that, because that line means a lot to me. Yeah, it's TV cart rolls in, Lord, hear our prayer. May your milk be chocolate, your pizza be square. Because remember when like the teacher or the substitute teacher would roll in a TV cart and you're like, yes. Either instead of learning, boo, you got to watch a movie. In high school, it was like Gattaca in bio, but as a kid, it was typically like Reading Rainbow or something fun, or on like a laser disc. And, or the TV cart rolls in, Lord Hear Our Prayer, was when it was raining outside. And I, as a youngster that did not like to get hot, and as a very, fair complexioned, rosacea-tastic individual who's just never really had the lung capacity for even light cardio or interest in it, I just would get so irrevocably flushed that recess hardly felt worth it to go hard. Same with gym class. I was basically just quackadilly-osoing in the shade when and where I could. I was so excited when the weather was inclement and we watched a movie during recess instead. So there's just all these little things that I would think about that would give me peace when I was, you know, a kid trying to figure out the world and feeling uncomfortable. And that poem is just like one of my favorite things I've ever written. Anyway, you know what I was thinking about when I was talking about those hand slapping games? Is how, for like a shy kid, some of the icebreaker stuff is so mortifying. It makes me shudder. Do you remember, did you ever guys ever do the, it was like, jump in, jump out, turn yourself about, jump or around, jump in, jump out, introduce yourself, my name is, yeah, and I'm a, yeah, and I'll be a, yeah, every day of my life. But there's different versions of it. Like, you like say your interest. Oh, God, now I'm forgetting. But it was so stressful, A, because you have to be a person with hobbies and interests, as you well know. I never really knew how to describe my hobbies and interests because it wasn't like other people. I just didn't have the, like a thing my whole life that I loved and felt comfortable talking about and that was like cool. So I was always panicked, and it had to be condensed to a few very short syllables. And sometimes you had to like have a follow-up rhyme depending on how the game was structured. It was so stressful to come up with on the fly, in the same way that another line of the poem was like, find a cubby, pick a buddy. Picking a buddy? Are you kidding me? The stress? Counting off in groups? And like in advance being like, oh my God, Tony's a four. I'm a four. We're going to be the same group. We're going to date. We're getting married. And a swoon. Like that's how I would think in like fifth grade. I was just always wanting to get in groups with my crush or panicking that I wanted to ask a particular buddy, but I didn't know if they wanted to be my buddy. I mean, the social anxiety involved with so many of these little things is so interesting in retrospect, and I just wonder if other people felt that way and we just weren't talking about it, or am I a neurotic weirdo that was way too concerned with social situations that nobody else was putting any thought into and I just tortured myself? Hard to say. When I was writing that poem that opened part one of the book, I had so many things flash in my mind that were just like, whoa. One of them was like, one of my first memories of worrying I'm a bad person is because when we were playing Heads Up 7-Up, sometimes I would look at the shoes and therefore know who put my thumb down. Is that so bad? When you want to be good, you don't want to be a cheater, but like, I'm sorry, that game had gaping holes in it that made it a hell of a lot easier to win. And Lord knows I was never going to excel at the only other rainy day indoor game, which was Silent Speedball. No more talking, no more fun. Silent Speedball has begun, where boys with like 10 times my strength would, whatever vague recreational ball, it wasn't a kickball, would take whatever vague recreational ball that we use for Silent Speedball and like pelt it at you a million miles an hour. And I can just like hear the ball like bouncing off my hands and onto the desk in front of me because you'd like put your desks in this giant circle to play to silence people. And it was it was so mortifying in elementary school or in gym class in middle school, like to not be able to catch a ball. Like some of us just don't have the hand-eye cord, the HEC, and some of us also don't care. And in hindsight, it's kind of wild to think about how awkward so much of those things were, at least for me, paired with being forced to do all these sports you had never done before or, you know, had tried but weren't very good at, but would be in class with people that were just generally super athletic or who actually played those sports. And you're just like forced to embarrass yourself over and over and over. Like, at one point when we were playing softball, I wanted to be like, can I just, how about I just not bat? I'm not going to hit it. Sometimes when I have a tendency to overly generalize or feel very off put by like male aggression, I swear to God, it all started during dodgeball. Like, dodgeball is systematic bullying. For some of us, dodgeball is genuinely terrifying and not fun. And there was an age where boys wanted to show off how hard they could throw something, and it didn't matter who it was directed toward. You were getting pelted and oftentimes welted after a full-on rubber kickball hit your skin at a very high speed from a very close distance. And I just always was like, are other people actually enjoying this? Because what I'm taking away here is that the only byproduct of this game is that I'm both injured and embarrassed. Later on, I learned that I am somewhat athletic. Like, I don't know, I played volleyball and tennis and stuff, and I did genuinely enjoy that. But gym class was just not the right environment for me to get better acquainted with my skills because it was just so embarrassing. That's a type of status or popularity I like didn't examine in popular girl handwriting when I was kind of explaining all the different ways people achieve popularity through like being cool or being well loved. But being good at a sport was definitely a way to garner male validation that I definitely envied at one point. And I remember watching girls during the presidential physical fitness test that were like gymnasts be able to do so many pull-ups and the guys thinking it was so cool, or being good at soccer, being really fast on the track. I think that's why I thought I had hope as like a, you know, Roxy Quicksilver girl to nab a vacation boyfriend, because those were activities outside of school. And I thought like if, you know, maybe I took a lesson and took a picture on a surfboard, that it would like really change my whole identity. And then I would also never really have to prove to anybody that I could actually do it. At one point I bought a skimboard, like what? But really, all I did was mostly boogie board my way through the Atlantic. And like, that's not a real sport. That's embarrassing. I think that's why I got so into music and LimeWire and burning CDs and learning about music, because pretending to like the same music as guys like became one of the only ways I figured out how to like relate to them and talk to them when I didn't like know what to talk to people about. Isn't that kind of interesting? There's just these certain things that make you cool and popular to girls or cool and popular to guys, depending on what you're after. I don't know why I'm like feeling embarrassed right now admitting this. Because, you know, I was confident in certain areas and it's not all I cared about, but, and I think most people just do stuff they like and aren't really paying attention to. I don't know if people think they're cool or popular. I just was very insecure. And I just always noticed these, like, there were these certain things that really upped your stock. Kind of like how guys really acted impressed, at least in high school, by the girls that drove stick shift. Honestly, I'm still impressed by them. I don't understand it at all. It looks so hard. That is multitasking at its finest. And it also just, to me, it's like, I don't fully understand buying a car and doing extra work for fun. But yeah, God, that was so cool. Okay. It is now Friday. These are the perils of podcasting too early in the week, because to quote Taylor Swift and Gordon Lightfoot, everything has changed. Guys, I feel so bad. Kate Middleton announced that she has cancer, and poor thing, this must be so scary and alarming. And she's so many eyes on her, and her medical records were attempted to be breached this week. And like, she has three young kids, and Jesus Christ, what's so crazy about the situation is that initially when they announced her abdominal surgery, they specifically, like, they almost went out of their way to say it's not cancer. And then Charles does have it and has been frank in talking about it, you know, doing messages with the public, showing his get well cards. Like, he's approached it with such candor. You just kind of assumed that if it was something like that, that she would have approached it the same way. But I do understand why it's different, because she has kids. And I totally understand that she probably went into that surgery not knowing, and it took a while to get the pathology or diagnosis and course of treatment. And beyond that, like sharing and explaining to their kids and figuring out a course of action going forward, because they have a very slim bench of working royals and who I just don't know. And she's probably going to be immunocompromised. And like, that's so scary. She, you know how many hands she shakes? I'm spiraling because I feel so bad because of how out of hand everything got. And like, this is what's so confusing about these stories. Like, even I acknowledged while talking about it. I mean, I did the bigger episode behind a paywall because I even felt kind of ugh about speculating. But I felt more comfortable after the Photoshop thing because it kind of seemed like something was being hidden. And what's hard is like Free Britney taught us that like, if something doesn't seem right, like it really might be quite wrong. And to be honest with you, like I never know when something's like on the table to talk about and shoot the shit about, because when something gets to like meme territory, and it's everywhere. It's almost like weird if you don't talk about it. And like I said, the question box, all that was the only thing anybody wanted to hear about. And if it's a within the scope of what you normally cover, it's like, yeah, let's get into it. And it's just interesting because The Atlantic came out with an article that was like, I hope you all feel terrible now. And a lot of the tone is like, oh, fuck all y'all that talked about this. And it's like, I get that. And yeah, that's what I'm saying. I feel like shit and I should know better than to speculate. But they initially said she didn't have cancer when there was like a cover-up seemingly going on. Sometimes it doesn't feel like the answer is to believe an institution that has a history of being harmful to the women that marry into it. You know what I mean? Like Meghan Markle was denied psychiatric treatment when she said she was having suicidal ideations. Like, I don't really trust the firm. I, of course, would prioritize and never undermine the humanity of a woman, of a mother, of a person who's entitled to their privacy and to process their cancer diagnosis. Are you kidding me? Of course I'm empathetic to that. It just got really confusing when it was just so ubiquitously talked about. But beyond that, even though you're entitled to send me a mean message about spreading rumors, somebody just DM'd me kind of suggesting that like the only place they'd ever heard of William's affair, like about Rose, was my podcast, which is fine if that's true. But also like that wasn't plucked from like 4chan or Reddit. Like the places I was refreshing my memory about those rumors that have been around for like 5 or 6 years are Newsweek, Cosmo, Glamour, The Independent, The Guardian. Like mainstream media was resuscitating the Rose Chumley rumors and about William. And I feel like people are turning a lot of this onto social media. And I think the social media crowd took their cues kind of from mainstream media. And so in some ways, I kind of try to take the lead of like, okay, what's fair game to talk about that's being widely reported on by actual journalists? So I, a non-journalist, am not like stepping out of bounds here, because I think a lot of the kind of Demois-style speculation is like really unfair and wrong when things are just so unfounded. But that's something that's been said about Prince William and Rose Chumley forever. And it seems like when actual journalistic outlets, you know, even though they operate on a spectrum of ethics, I mean, I was even reading about Prince William's affair in Vanity Fair. So yeah, it's this weird thing where, I mean, we mostly talked about American Riviera Orchard on the main feed. But I don't know, I feel bad that that's what it turned out to be. And I'm sure it's been really scary and hard to figure out. And I just hope there wasn't like added pressure on her. And I hate to say that like she was thrown under the bus for the Photoshop, because as I said on the Patreon, like I actually think it's plausible that was like her solution and she edits and she just was like being a bit careless. But I know people don't agree with me on that. But like we've all edited a photo. We're just also not like future queen. I don't want to like deny her of her like agency, you know, like and assume she has no power or control over there. But also it's just like not the craziest thing to assume that people could be making decisions for her. And I don't know. Anyways, I'm sorry for contributing to it. I feel really guilty. Just what an interesting intersection of kind of lighthearted internet memification and, you know, running wild with speculation that isn't full conspiracy, because a lot of the stuff like we've seen happen before, and I don't like it completely being reduced to that, but a lot of it was out of hand and made more confusing by like legitimate news sources too. Like, I mean, the TMZ paid that passerby who was on a high horse at the farmer's market being like, they're just a normal couple, leave them alone. I felt so bad, blah, blah, blah. But he apparently made £200,000 from selling that video, that grainy iPhone 11 slash maybe Nokia 98 model that allowed you to play Snake. And I don't know, the whole thing's confusing. I'm like, but you're just as guilty. If that was a private moment you sold as a paparazzi photo. But then you think even Elizabeth Holmes said, like, it did seem sanctioned by Kensington Palace. And I kind of thought after that, I was like, oh, case closed. She's out and about. I guess we're good. But yeah, did not see this coming. But beyond that, it was made worse by the TMZ guy. You know, those guys on TMZ that like drink coffee out of giant insulated mugs and like shout over cubicles at each other. One of the guys that kept going back on it over and over, like it was three times or something, questioning if it was her, but like TMZ bought the footage. And it was just like, what? Anyways, it just seemed like there were enough legitimate places confused and speculating that it felt on the table for us. And I guess going forward, I just need to figure out what hype do you pander to and what do you just ignore? I got to figure it out, you guys. Anyway, maybe I'll talk about it more on Patreon. I'm not sure. But I guess that like this worked out that this episode is like me talking about school lunches, because I guess the thing I could do in service to the situation is just to drop it. Bubble, 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 pop. All right, you guys. I'm not going to tell you to review this episode. It was not my best work. It's now Saturday night. And editing this back, I'm just laughing, like I'm just going around in circles, and life continues to imitate art, because truly, here I go loop-de-loop all on a Saturday night. But anyway, you can find me at Kate Kennedy. All that I ask is that you come back next week. I hope you have a great week. If you read my book and want to rate it 5 stars, like that would be insanely helpful, just because I hope to have a future writing career. And if you want to call into Kate Lila, advice, questions, feedback, thoughts, the number is 312-379-9676. You can also find that number in a highlight on both Instagram accounts, Be There, at Be There in 5, at Kate Kennedy. You can also find at BeThereIn5.com all the sponsor codes, shop merch, shop my Amazon storefront, shop my baby faves on my Amazon storefront. You know, let me tap dance here and tell you all the different ways I can make money off of you, but... in all seriousness, I appreciate you being here. Thank you for the privilege of your time. As always, let me know your thoughts, and I will let you know mine. I'll be there in 5, I swear.